All right, good morning, everybody. Welcome to class. My watch says March 1st, but it's wrong. Because it's not March 1st, it's actually February 29th, and my watch doesn't know that every 4 years there should be an extra day in the year, right? So today is February 29th, March 1st is tomorrow. We're going to go over joints today, which is, what chapter is that? Chapter 9. Okay. All right, so where are we in the class? I think we're about a week and a half away from the next lecture exam, which means that next week is a practicum, your second practicum in lab, whether you have the class on Monday or Wednesday, all depends on when you have the practicum. Okay, so what can you do for the practicum? Remember, only things that are in your lab list you're responsible for. So anything in lab unit number 2, and that also includes something from unit number 1, we got to go back and test you on the integument model. Right, so the skin model, have all different layers of the epithelium and the epidermis and the dermis and some accessory structures within the dermis. But you got 3 pretty nice videos in Blackboard to review that particular model. But if you want to review that model, of course, if you're in the lab this afternoon, you're certainly welcome to do that. Go back and review it. But it's also in the display case up on the 3rd floor. So anytime the building is open, you can look at that in the display case right outside the anatomy room. And it's also in the anatomy study room, which will be open a lot tomorrow and probably even today. If you want to go in and look at bones in the study room or that model, you're welcome to. The library also has bones. And the library is not open on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So today and tomorrow would be the last day you could look at the bones in the library. All right. So does anybody have any questions on bones, right, for the practicum coming up next week? That's good. That's good, good, good. All right, so let's start talking about joints and how we classify joints. All right, a joint is just a connection between 2 separate bones that are in your body. That's a joint. And probably you're aware that some of these joints are really movable, like your elbow, for instance, and some don't move at all, like sutures in the skull. So you're probably aware that you have different kinds of joints inside your body, and you got to know something about the different types that you have. So let's talk about classifying joints. All right, so a joint is an articulation between 2 bones where they meet, right? And sometimes it gives your skeleton mobility in that area. Or if it's an immovable joint, it just holds your body together at that particular location. So we can classify joints either by their structure or by how they function, right? And sometimes these things are going to be really similar, but we need to make a distinction between them. So let's talk about structural classification first. It's based on the material that binds the bones together, and basically that's going to be a connective tissue, and you're aware of a whole bunch of connective tissues already. All right, so some joints are fibrous. So what kind of fiber is used to hold joints together, would you guess? It should be strong. Yeah, collagen, right? So there are fibrous joints that are held together with collagen, for instance. A fibrous joint that holds your tooth into your mandible or your maxilla, that's pretty strong. That shouldn't be, it's really hard to damage, so there are collagen fibers. You've never taken a tooth and like pulled it out of your mandible and then let it go and have it snap back in? Okay, if that were to happen, what kind of fiber would be used for that? Elastic, right? Well, we don't have elastic fibers holding our teeth in position, right? That's collagen fibers. Other joints are cartilaginous, right? They have cartilage between them. Like there's a meniscus in your knee, there's a meniscus in the pubic symphysis. Right, so those are cartilaginous joints. And then the third kind, by structure, is a synovial joint. And you do have a nice picture in this particular chapter that describes all the features of a synovial joint. So it's a little bit more complicated. It's just not cartilage, it's just not fibers, but there are membranes and spaces and other kinds of dense connective tissue in a synovial joint. And we'll look at that toward the end of the lecture. All right, so you've got fibrous, cartilaginous, and synovious as a structural kind of classification. But then we also want to talk about a joint in terms of its function. And here are 3 terms: synarthrosis, amphiarthrosis, and diarthrosis. All right, so that's something you gotta practice maybe spelling. right? And these terms right here refer to the amount of motion that a particular joint is allowed. All right, so a synarthrosis is an immovable joint. A really good example of an immovable joint would be sutures in the skull, because our skulls don't move around when we're thinking or talking or anything like that. They don't get really squished together or bulge out. All right, so a suture would be a good example of a synarthrosis. An amphiarthrosis is slightly movable, like intervertebral joints. You can sort of bend your back a little bit. You can bend forward a little bit, bend backward a little bit. You can turn to the side, right? So it's slightly movable at the intervertebral joints, and you have that intervertebral disc between the vertebral bodies of vertebrae. And then the third classification is diarthrosis. These are joints that are meant to move a lot and move freely. For instance, like your wrist, all right? Those are freely movable joints, or your elbow, or your shoulder, or your hip, or your knee. Those kinds of joints between those bones are freely movable, all right? And you know the names of all those bones by now. Okay, so when you think of synarthrosis and amphiarthrosis and diarthrosis, is by increasing order of mobility. So if you take the first letter of each of these words right here, what does that spell out? Sad. That's right. So you might just, that might be a nice handy trick to remember. All right, that SAD, right, stands for synarthrosis and amphiarthrosis and then diarthrosis. And that just tells you the degree of mobility, starting with what? The least mobile, and then ending up with the most mobile form of those joints. So that's going to be really handy, I think. All right, so let's look at fibrous joints. And fibrous joints, I want to go back. Okay, fibrous joint is what kind of classification? If we say fibrous, what kind of classification scheme is that? Of the two major types of schemes. It's a structural classification, right? So we're going to look at some joints by their structure. All right, so fibrous joints are connected by dense regular connective tissue, and they lack a joint cavity. There's no cavity between the bones. There's a lot of collagen fibers, right? So that's dense regular connective tissue. Some examples of these things would be sutures between bones of the skull. All right, so these are immovable. All right, so what kind of joint by function is immovable? What were the three classifications by function? We see it right here. Synarthrosis, amphiarthrosis, and diarthrosis. So a suture, right, is a fibrous joint because it has collagen, but we could also classify by the kind of motion. And remember, it doesn't have any motion between those bones, so it is also what kind of joint by function? It's a synarthrosis, right? Okay. And over here on the left-hand side is a nice illustration of a joint, okay, between bones of the skull, and it's connected with a lot of fibers, and these joints are immovable. They're a synarthrosis, all right, and it's also a fibrous joint, so there's different ways that you can think about a joint, either by its structural classification or its functional classification. That's a suture. We've talked about that a lot. What we haven't talked about a lot yet is a syndesmosis. Right, these are two bones. It's a joint between two bones that are connected exclusively by ligaments. And the amount of motion depends on the type of joint it is, where it's located in the body. All right, so for instance, this distal tibiofibular joint right here, right, this is, right, a synarthrosis. It's immovable. This joint shouldn't move because it would destabilize the ankle joint. All right, so again, so this is a syndesmosis, and it's a fibrous joint, and it's also a synarthrosis because it's immovable. Last time I showed you another joint between the bones of the forearm, like the radius and the ulna. There's a membrane, there's a fibrous membrane between the ulna and the radius, right, and also between the tibia and fibula. But if you think of the radius and ulna, what can you do with your wrist? You can pronate and supinate, so the radius and ulna actually move nice and freely, right? And that interosseous membrane, right, stabilizes the forearm a little bit, but allows for motion, so that is a diarthrosis, right? That's a freely movable joint. So you can pronate and supinate just fine. I don't have an example, maybe on the next page, but I don't have an example to show you the interosseous membrane between, for instance, the fibula and tibia, but more importantly, between what the radius and the ulna in the forearm. All right, another kind of fibrous joint is a gomphosis. I've kind of mentioned it in a couple places in the class already, but I never called it a gomphosis. But for instance, that's a peg that's fitting in some kind of hole in your body. The peg would be your tooth, and the hole would be an alveolus in the maxilla or the mandible. And there are collagen fibers that attach the root of the tooth to this alveolar process right here. And we call these periodontal ligaments. Peri means surrounding, dontal means tooth, so it's just a ligament that completely surrounds the tooth and anchors it into a jawbone. Okay, and this type of joint is what, a fibrous joint? And it's also, is it movable or immovable? It shouldn't be moving, right? You can't pull that tooth out, let it snap back in. All right, so what do we call a joint that is immovable? It's, remember, SAD, it's the first one. It is synarthrosis, right? Okay. So, those are fibrous joints. Those are all fibrous joints. All right, let's talk about cartilaginous joints. So we're done talking about fibrous joints. So again, a cartilaginous joint is a joint described by what kind of attributes? Structure or function? Yeah, cartilage is a structure, right? So again, it's a structural classification. And we've got a couple kinds of joints. There's a synchondrosis. All right, now how would you know that this is a cartilaginous type joint, a synchondrosis? Because you see chondro in there, right? So that's kind of a dead giveaway. All right, so synchondrosis is the bones are united by hyaline cartilage. All right, so some of them might be synarthroses, meaning immovable. Like, for instance, this epiphyseal plate right here, which is the growth plate on an epiphysis of a long bone. That's an immovable joint, right, during development. And if it does move, then that damages the epiphyseal plate. And if the epiphyseal plate gets damaged, what unfortunately happens? Yeah, then the bone stops growing in length, at least at that one end of the bone. Okay, so epiphyseal discs, and also the joint between the first rib and the manubrium, this joint right here is immovable as well. Okay, and it kind of anchors the rest of your thoracic cage together right here. And it is cartilage, it's hyaline cartilage, right, so it's a synchondrosis. All right, another kind of joint, a symphysis. I think we've talked about a symphysis before. Okay, a symphysis has fibrocartilage, and it is slightly movable. A good example would be the pubic symphysis, or symphysis pubis. It could be one, you could label it either way that you wanted. Symphysis pubis is a little bit more archaic, or maybe a little bit more classical way of talking about this joint right here, so either one is fine. But it is fibrocartilage, and the intervertebral discs between the vertebral bodies is fibrocartilage as well. All right, and that's what we call a symphysis type joint. And they're slightly movable. So how would you figure out what's a slightly movable joint? Think of what's the acronym? SAD. And slightly movable is going to be which one of those letters? Right smack in the middle, right? And that's going to be the A, and that's going to be what? The amphiarthrosis type of joint. All right, and here are some examples of that. Okay, then that takes us to another kind of joint, okay, a synovial joint. And again, that's a classification. So we talked about fibrous, we talked about cartilaginous and some sub-examples of cartilaginous joints, and then a synovial joint. And synovial joints are maybe a little bit complicated because of all the structures are involved, but here's something that makes synovial joints really easy. In terms of function, they are all freely movable joints. Every single kind of synovial joint is freely movable, which means what? Or what kind? What's the word that describes freely movable? Yeah, the D in SAD, which is what? Diarthroses. So all of these are going to be diarthroses. So diarthroses are all characterized by having a fluid-filled joint cavity, right? And all synovial joints are freely movable. I said that a number of times. Okay, so let's look at a typical kind of synovial joint. So this is a really good exam figure to know something about. So we see the proximal bone and the distal bone covering these smooth parts of the bones that are articulating together. What do we call this part of a bone right here? That's for articulation. What do we call this part of a bone? Starts with a C. And the next letter is an O. Yep. And so this is the condyle, right? And it's going to be smooth if you palpate it with your fingertip. Right? So here's a condyle. Here's a condyle. It's going to be this nice smooth surface. And then right on the surface of the condyle is always going to be some nice articular cartilage or hyaline cartilage. And you should maybe have a picture in your mind what hyaline cartilage looks like. It doesn't have any fibers in it. Doesn't contain blood vessels either. Okay, it's nice and spongy, smooth and slippery, so these bones can move with respect to each other very, very nicely. And there is hyaline cartilage or articular cartilage on the corresponding condyle in the other bone, whether it's a nice round surface or a facet or a depression. Okay, so that's the first thing about a synovial joint. The ends of bones that are touching each other should be covered with hyaline cartilage. All right, the next thing that we see is that cavity that I was talking about. So we call this the synovial cavity. And inside the synovial cavity, we have synovial fluid, which lubricates and nourishes the cells of the articular cartilage right here. And that synovial fluid just kind of weeps away from the synovial membrane. So the synovial membrane produces the synovial fluid, and that keeps the hyaline cartilage nice and healthy, and it lubricates the joint. So sometimes we call that weeping lubrication of the joint from the synovial membrane. If the synovial membrane gets ripped or torn or damaged, guess what happens? That destroys the integrity of the synovial cavity, and maybe that membrane will actually bleed into this cavity right here, and it's going to swell up, or if it gets inflamed, it will produce too much synovial fluid, and that's going to produce pain and immobility within the joint when that happens. Okay. Compounds in the synovial fluid have a nice tendency to stay nice and fluid if you use the joint. If you exercise the joint, the fluid stays nice and liquid. But if you stop using this joint, then the synovial fluid turns into a jelly-like material, gets very viscous, and then it's very difficult to use that joint after that period of time. So even people that have arthritis, which is an inflammation of this joint right here, are told to exercise joints, because if they don't exercise the joint, what happens to it? It gets stiffer and less mobile as a result. So even with people that have damage to joints, right, they have to learn how to use joints repeatedly in the proper way to keep them working. Otherwise, they stop working. All right, so that synovial fluid is pretty important. And that comes from the synovial membrane. Okay, there's something that is outside the synovial membrane, and that's the fibrous capsule. That's the strong part. The synovial membrane is pretty weak and delicate, right? But the fibrous capsule right here is pretty strong because it has collagen fibers. So that's like the underlying base for the synovial membrane. Yeah. Oh, number four. You know, when I made this slide right here, I think I had it in some kind of automatic formatting, and I didn't know how to like move synovial fluid up to number four right there, so I just said, heck with it, I'll just leave a space. So I didn't mean it to be like a quiz for you to fill in, but that's a nice thought. Okay, so yeah, there's nothing that belongs in number four. I was just making a list, and I didn't know how to, or every time I formatted it, it automatically reformatted to this thing. Okay, so hopefully there's not like a page break in there when you guys print it out, or 10 page breaks, and you get 10 blank pages in there. It's just a blank line, hopefully. Okay, so if we put a synovial membrane together with the fibrous capsule, if we put these two things together, then we get something called the articular capsule, right? Or that another way of thinking of that is maybe the joint capsule. But remember, articular and joint really mean the same thing. All right, and then to further stabilize this joint and protect the synovial cavity, most joints have ligaments that span the joint, that go from the proximal to the distal bone. And again, that just reinforces the articular capsule. All right, so remember, a ligament is what kind of connection? It's a bone-to-bone connection, right? And it's dense, regular connective tissue. So it's a very strong kind of material as well that reinforces the articular capsule, and it just protects the integrity of the joint. All right, and then surrounding the bone, the other thing that I see right here is the periosteum. The periosteum is continuous with the ligament that goes across the joint, as well as the articular capsule. So all these things are pretty much just glued together in your body. So this is what we call reinforcing ligaments, right? That ligament right there. All right, so that's pretty much a typical synovial joint, a little bit more complicated than the other joints that we were looking at in the body, right? But there's some other things that are important about certain kinds of joints as well. Some bones exert a lot of pressure against each other, right? And if it only had hyaline cartilage between the ends of the bones, that hyaline cartilage would be damaged. So there are special little cavities that are inserted between different parts of joints. For instance, here is the head of the humerus, and here is the humerus down over here. Here is a tendon. And I don't think we talked about what the function of a tendon is, but a tendon is a special connection between what? Between a muscle and a bone, right? And when that muscle contracts, it puts a lot of tension on the tendon, which then puts a lot of tension on a bone. This one comes from the biceps brachii, and it goes over the head of the humerus and inserts into the scapula. As a matter of fact, it inserts into the supraglenoid tubercle, which we learned about in lab. Okay, so this tendon has a lot of tension placed on it, and it's going to cause inflammation of the head of the humerus, except there are some special structures that prevent that. One thing is what we call a tendon sheath. And a tendon sheath is like a synovial capsule, but it encircles or surrounds this tendon as it goes over the head of the humerus. So this tendon sheath has a synovial membrane, which secretes synovial fluid into the cavity of the tendon sheath, and then there's a fibrous capsule on the outside to protect it. And this thing is like a slippery little pillow that surrounds the tendon. So when the tendon moves, this just allows the tendon to slide and slip over the head of the humerus without rubbing into it and eroding the head of the humerus away. So that's typically what a tendon sheath is a little auxiliary synovial capsule that prevents inflammation between a tendon and a bone that it is bumping up against. So think of it as like a little pillow. On the inside is that slippery fluid. Okay, there's another thing called a bursa. And we have bursas between bones or between bones and tendons that bump up against each other when a muscle is used. And a bursa is very much like a tendon sheath in that there's a fibrous capsule and then a synovial membrane and then synovial fluid on the inside. But again, it's just a very slippery pillow on the inside that prevents the head of the humerus from bumping up against and inflaming the acromion process of the scapula right here. And this bursa can roll back and forth when you move your arm, right? And so it does a really good job of inhibiting inflammation within the shoulder. So this is the bursa, and you can see it rolling back and forth as the humerus is being used right here. All right, so that's a bursa. We have a number of bursa all over our body. There are a number in our hips and our elbow and ankles and things like that. And if you overstress a joint, okay, you can cause an inflammation or even a swelling, right, of this bursa right here. And what would we call that? That would be bursitis, right? When this bursa gets overstressed and the synovial membrane gets damaged and then it starts to fill up with fluid, okay, then that causes pain and also some immobility of that joint, because instead of having a nice thin pillow right here, you have what? A nice big thick pillow, which inhibits motion, okay? And also the pain associated with it inhibits motion. So a bursa and a tendon sheath are pretty much the same thing, just in a little bit different parts of your body. And a good way to think of a tendon sheath and a bursa is use the model of what? The synovial joint right here, okay, that has the synovial membrane, synovial cavity, and the fibrous capsule on the outside. Except one is going to go around a tendon and the other is going to be between two bones. All right, so that's a pretty good example of the humerus. Okay, some joints, some synovial joints, okay, have an extra little piece to them. Oh, I'm going to have to go and take a look. Okay, have an extra little piece of cartilage. For instance, okay, so here is a joint between the clavicle and manubrium, and there's hyaline cartilage over the end of the clavicle here. This is what the sternal end of the clavicle. Here's the manubrium, and it has hyaline cartilage over it. But this particular joint has a special little piece of fibrocartilage between the joints that additionally protects the joints, and it matches up the shape of these joints so that they're complementary to each other. That's called an articular disc. So some joints even have an articular disc or extra fibrocartilage between the bones. All right, another example of a joint that has that is the TMJ, temporomandibular joint, which I can't see inside, but there's fibrocartilage between the mandibular condyle, right, and the fossa right here, which again helps stabilize the temporomandibular joint. Oh, here's a good example. Here it is. All right, so here is the mandibular condyle. Here's the mandibular fossa of the temporal bone. And then here is the joint cavity, synovial cavity, the inferior one. Here's the superior joint cavity. And they're separated by fibrocartilage right here. All right, so that's a pretty complicated joint. If this fibrocartilage becomes damaged, maybe you get a blow to the side of the mandible, okay, then this cartilage, this articular disc, can be damaged. And I don't really know how they treat temporomandibular joints, but I know who I would want to go to talk about diagnosing problems of the TMJ and how to fix them. What kind of clinician would you want to go talk to? Because it's associated with your oral cavity, that would be a dentist, okay, that would know most about this particular joint. And I think today, whenever you go get your prophylaxis on your teeth, they always check the mobility of that joint and ask you, because it can cause sleep problems and eating problems and breathing problems and all kinds of problems. Okay, so articular disc. But the prime example of an articular disc that most people are familiar with is the knee. So let's look at this picture of the knee right here. All right, so here is the superior part, superior bone in the knee, which is the, we haven't talked about this in lab, but you kind of know, you probably should know, okay, what bone makes up the superior part of the knee? That's going to be the femur, right? So we see the condyles of the femur right here, and the condyles are nice and smooth. Additionally, they're covered with hyaline cartilage. And what kind of joint is the knee by function? What kind of joint is by function? Yeah, it's the third letter in SAD, diarthrosis. It's freely movable. And then by structure, what kind of joint is it? Is it fibrous or cartilaginous or synovial? And it is a synovial joint. And remember, all synovial joints are freely movable. All right, so I don't see the joint capsule right here, but this shows some of the tendons and ligaments of the knee. And here is that articular disc right here and right here. And in the knee, we call that a meniscus. And they're kind of shaped like this. What letter of the alphabet does that remind you of? It looks like a C. Indeed, they are C-shaped articular discs. We'll see that in lab. The tips of the C are really narrow, right? And the back part of the C right here is actually pretty thick, right? So it's thick and strong. The tips are thin and, if you were to use that analogy, if the back is thick and strong, the tips are thin and, oops, sorry, cursor, people, there. The tips are thin and weak as a result of that. They're more fragile, right? So when somebody bends their knee inappropriately, then the meniscus can actually break, and guess where it likes to break? These little tips, because that's the weakest part of a meniscus, right? And it's going to be wedge-shaped, because that's the shape of the C. It gets thicker as we move back laterally over here, All right, and then that meniscus can actually float around inside the joint capsule, and it can get wedged between a couple bones, and when it gets wedged between the femur and tibia in a certain way, then people can actually have their knees lock up on them as a result. They can't bend their knee. In which case, then what has to happen? Then that part of the meniscus has to be taken out, right, so that you have mobility of the knee again. Okay. It used to be when somebody had a torn meniscus, they would just take the whole meniscus out of the knee. But then what are you left with? You have the femur bumping right up against the tibia right here, right, and that hyaline cartilage, and the cartilage would wear away prematurely, and then the bones would start rubbing on each other. And what condition is that when bones of a joint start rubbing against each other? We call that arthritis, right? Arthritis. Okay, so now if you have a damaged meniscus, of course a physician is going to try to preserve as much as possible, and that will keep the health of the knee as long as possible as a result of that. Okay, so what else we see on this diagram right here are reinforcing ligaments. All right, I don't know if I want to talk about the knee right now. We're going to come back to the knee in a little bit. Let's talk about some movements of various kinds of joints. Okay, this is kind of fun. I've been wanting to talk about movements like from day one because I'm talking about how your body moves, but you didn't know the terminology on how to think about it. So let's start reviewing some terminology, and I can use some of these terms, okay, in lab. Okay, here we have a bunch of bones in the wrist. What are these things called? Carpals, right? And I see a joint right here that's really nice and flat, and this is relatively flat. And I see some other joints that are relatively flat. These are synovial joints, which means what? In terms of mobility. They're freely movable, okay? But because of these joints are like two tabletops resting on each other, they can only slide over each other's surface. So that's what we call a gliding joint. They can't rotate, they can't flex and extend, right? They can only slide over the tops of each other. All right, so we call those, this is a gliding type of joint. All right, so that's one kind. Another kind of joint is producing angular motion. All right, some angular motions might look like maybe a hinge joint, for instance. Let's look at some joints that are angular. Let's see what this next one is. That's not bad. That's okay. Let's look at the knee in particular and then work backwards a little bit. All right, so if we look at the knee when you're in anatomic position right here, here's the femur and it's straight, right? It just is a nice straight alignment with the tibia and fibula. And if we were to measure the angle between the femur and the tibia, what would this angle be? 180 degrees, right? They're just in a straight line. Okay. And if we cause the leg to move up off the ground, up toward the femur right here, all right, moving around this little point, we call that flexion. So classically, flexion is when we decrease the angle between two bones. And can you see this angle decreasing? Now it's what? Instead of 180, it's closer to 90. And if we flex some more, then it's going to be 90, then 80, right? And if you kick yourself here in the buttocks, then it's what? Like almost zero. Okay. Okay, so that's what we call flexion. Decreasing the angle between two bones is flexion. All right, and what's the opposite motion? It's when you straighten your knee back out, right? So your leg goes back down to the ground. That's what we call extension, right? So there's just a rotation around this axis in the knee right here, extension and flexion. Various other parts of your body can extend and flex. These are what we call antagonistic motions, right? So there are some muscles that produce flexion, and there are some muscles that produce extension, and they're always working together so that you have the right amount of motion at a particular joint. All right, so the knee is pretty easy to see. Let me see if there is a hip someplace. Do I have a hip? I don't have a hip. So what I'm going to do, I'll go back to the slide right here, okay? I guess I'll just demonstrate it for you, okay? Hopefully not too bad. I'll hold on, so don't worry, especially you people in the front row. I won't fall on you, okay? So here's my hip, right? And compared to my thigh, compared to my torso, is what kind of angle? it's straight, right, 180 degrees. And if I bend at the hip, okay, what's happening to that angle? It's decreasing, getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So this is flexion at the hip, or we could say flexion of the thigh, right? So you could talk about it in terms of the joint or the body part that's moving, okay? So in terms of the knee that we just looked at, okay, so this is, what do we call that? That's flexion, okay? Flexion where? At the knee, or you could say flexion of what body part? The leg, okay? So flexion of the hip, flexion of the leg is like that. Or you could say flexion at the hip or flexion at the knee, either one. And you can clearly see that the angle is what? Getting smaller, it's decreasing. Okay. Your shoulder is pretty interesting. It can do all kinds of different motions. We'll look at some of these other motions. But let's just think of extension and flexion. And this one is not very intuitive at all. Okay. So in anatomic position, where is your arm going to be? Just down by your side. Okay. And flexion is going to be when you raise your arm in front of you and anteriorly. So only consider my arm and not my forearm or wrist or anything like that. So this is what we call flexion. And I don't see any angle getting smaller. All right, so it doesn't obey the general rule. You just have to memorize this is flexion. And when you bring your arm down back to your side, that is extension, right? So flexion and extension. But here's a key to understanding how to memorize that motion. Okay, what did we call this motion? Flexion of the thigh, right? And if we're going to flex the arm, guess what happens? It looks the same. So this is flexion of the arm, just like it's flexion of the thigh. This is extension of the thigh. This is extension at the shoulder or extension of the arm. All right? So that's the best way to know flexion and extension at the shoulder. All right, there's something else you can do with your shoulder. All right, so you can flex, you can extend, but what else is really cool with the shoulder? You can hyperextend. So you can hyperextend. You can hyperextend at the hip maybe a little bit. That's hyperextension. All right, let's look at your digits right here. I should have warmed up. Okay, so you have your digits. When it's 180 degrees and you decrease the angle between bones, what do we call that? That's flexion, and then this is extension. Some people can hyperextend. My digits don't hyperextend very well. Okay, that doesn't happen so much. Okay, so hyperextending the phalanges, that's not a good thing to do. Now, what about the wrist? What's this motion? That's flexion at the wrist. Here is extension at the wrist, and what's this? Hyperextension. So it's easy to hyperextend. So it all depends on the joint, how it's put together, if hyperextension is allowed. Okay. So those different body parts, you can practice flexion and extension. They're antagonistic motions. Uh-oh, I have a sneeze coming on. Maybe it will go away. Let's look at another kind of motion. And let's look at an upper appendage. And in anatomic position, it's going to be just straight down by your sides. And if we elevate your arms like this, move it away from midline, up and away from midline, we call that abduction. And if we bring the arms back down to your sides like that, we call that adduction. So adding your arms to your body is adduction. Moving it away is like subtracting from your body is abduction. So ab is away, adduction. Sorry if you can't understand, but I have the microphone, so probably you can hear what I'm saying. Abduction and adduction. Maybe that was better. Okay. That's something that can happen at the shoulder, but you can also do that where? Your hips. That was abduction. Here's adduction. So there are adductors and abductor muscles in your body. For instance, we're going to look at those. Where else can you abduct and adduct? Your digits, right? That would be abduction. This would be adduction. When you add your fingers together like that. And what is that? Live long and prosper. I don't know what kind of anatomical term that is. Okay. Something else, because of the shoulder joint right here is a ball and socket joint, you can flex and extend and abduct all at the same time and make a windmill motion right here. That's called circumduction. So that happens in a ball and socket kind of joint. And where else do you have a ball and socket joint besides the shoulder? In your hip. So you can do circumduction at the hip as well, okay? Which is just a combination of flexion, extension, abduction, and adduction all at the same time, okay? Rotation, okay, of one bone around a long axis of another bone. Let's see what I got for that. Okay, yeah, your head, for instance. You can turn your head to the left, you can turn your head to the right, okay? And what two bones in your cervical spine are specially modified to allow for lateral rotation? And of course, then bringing it back medially to medial rotation. It's the joint between C1 and C2, right? Or the atlas and axis, because the axis has a dens, and the atlas can rotate right around the dens that is on C2. So that's a nice rotational motion. You can also do that with your humerus. All right, so to help you see that, I'm going to do this motion. What is this motion called? That's flexion. It's decreasing the angle. Here's extension. So I'm going to flex at the elbow just so that you can see what my humerus is doing. Okay, and you can rotate your humerus so that your hand comes toward midline. That's a medial rotation of the humerus, and this is a lateral rotation of the humerus. So medial rotation, lateral rotation. So the humerus is actually turning around. And that's just kind of a special feature of a ball and socket joint. And you can do that with your lower appendage as well, with your femur. You can medial rotate or laterally rotate. Pretty important kinds of motions. They're used for really easy diagnoses of certain conditions. All right, with the mandible, okay, around this axis right here, you can open up your mouth. We call that depression of the mandible. Okay, we don't have very strong muscles to do that, because if we just relax all of the muscles in our body, what's going to happen to our mandible because of gravity? It's just going to open pretty much all by itself. Okay, so we have some weak muscles that do that, but we have strong muscles that will elevate the mandible around this point right here. All right, and so that's elevation. The mandible can also do some other things, okay, because of that temporomandibular joint is pretty complicated. We can move the mandible anteriorly like this. Careful, don't chip a tooth. We call that protraction. Or you can actually move your mandible way back, okay, toward your neck, and it's called retraction. So you can jut your mandible in and out just like that. Protraction and retraction. That's probably used for some other parts of your body as well, like your shoulder. You can protract your shoulder. You can, what's that called?
Retract,
yeah, you can retract as well, okay. A couple other body parts you can do that with. All right, here is, I don't know, maybe one of the more complicated kinds of motions, but it's not too hard to remember. In anatomic position, which way are the thumbs facing? Laterally, okay. In anatomic position, the bones of the forearm are nice and parallel to each other. All right, so what's the bone that matches up with the thumb on the lateral side of the forearm? Yeah, it's the radius. It's going to be over here, and over here is the ulna. They're going to be parallel to each other in anatomic position. But we have special muscles in our forearm that allow the radius to cross over the ulna to change the position of the palms of the hands, like that. So the ulna is actually crossing over, and you can see like an imaginary x-ray right here. Anatomic position, the radius and the ulna are parallel, all right? But when you face your palms posteriorly, the radius then crosses over the ulna. They're crossed over each other. And hence, anatomic position is with the thumbs pointing laterally, because that's the simplest kind of position. When your palms are facing posteriorly like this, we call that pronation. All right, so palms, posterior, pronation, a lot of P's kind of line up. That's easy to remember. All right, and when you bring your palms anteriorly to get into anatomic position, bring the palms of your hands together like that, and it forms a little bowl, okay? And what do you put in a bowl at home? Soup, okay? So it's really easy for you to remember. Supination is when the palms of your hands are facing anteriorly like that, right? Pronation, supination. But the other thing you should realize is how these bones in the forearm cross over each other. Okay. Dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. Let's see what kind of diagrams I have for that. Oh, I might have something here. This is a pretty good diagram, illustration of it. Okay. Notice that in anatomic position, your upper appendage and lower appendage are a little bit different. They're kind of twisted in certain spots. They're not exactly the same. Because if I flex at the elbow, which way is my hand going to move? It's going to move up and anteriorly. But if I flex at the knee, which way does my foot go? It doesn't go up and anteriorly. It goes up and posteriorly. So my elbow and knee really don't match up exactly. One is twisted around compared to the other, right? So at the wrist, right, at the wrist, this is flexion and extension. That's pretty easy to see. But now at the ankle, because your lower appendage is twisted a little bit, the motion at the ankle can't be defined as easily as compared to the wrist. So when you lift your toes up off the ground, like this, okay, we call that dorsiflexion. Lifting your toes up off the ground is dorsiflexion. When you point your toes, when you bend your ankle, okay, and point your toes into the ground, that's called plantar flexion. So right now, as I'm standing here, and I go up on my tiptoes, that's called plantar flexion, because I'm pointing my toes into the ground. Right, and if I go back down and lift my toes up off the ground like that, that's called dorsiflexion. All right, so plantar flexion, dorsiflexion, and that's what you see on this diagram right here. So both are flexion kinds of motions. But nonetheless, they're what? Antagonistic to each other. They're opposite motions. Okay, we talked about protraction, retraction, elevation. So we still need to look at inversion and eversion and opposition. All right. Here is inversion and eversion at the ankle. It's almost like abduction and adduction. Maybe that's a good way to think of it. All right. When... Here are some ankle bones sticking out. What are these things right here? How many bones do you have in the leg? You got two. What are the names of the two bones in the leg? Tibia and fibula. Okay, so don't forget that. But now let's look at the toes. Here's a big toe, here's a great toe, here's a little toe. The great toe is where? Medial or lateral? It's medial. Your thumb is lateral, but because things are twisted in the lower appendage, right, the great toe is medial. All right, so what bone is medial in the leg? This is what I really wanted to get at. What bone is medial in the leg? And you got to remember, you got to write it out, maybe even 100 times, so it just comes to you really fast. That's the tibia, and the lateral bone is going to be the fibula, right? And the reason why that's important, because you want to know what this malleolus is right here, malleolus. This is on the tibia, so it's the medial malleolus, and this is on the fibula, so this is the lateral malleolus, right? Okay, so the tibia has the medial, and the fibula has the lateral malleolus. So if you bend your foot so that you end up standing on the lateral malleolus right here, I definitely want to hold on to something when I do this, and only people in the front row. So if I bend my ankle to stand on my lateral malleolus of the fibula, right, we call that inversion. And I could probably walk around like that because I've sprained my ankle so many times playing sports and things, right? And so that's inversion. Eversion is if you try to stand on your medial malleolus. That's really difficult to do because you have more ligaments and tendons, all right, that stabilize the ankle. And even on this diagram, you can see a bigger bend right here when the foot is inverted compared to when it's just slightly bent at the ankle when you evert. All right. But if for some reason, if you do severely evert the foot, that produces, what, a really severe injury at the ankle when that happens. Okay, so you got inversion and eversion. Think of it as standing on either one malleolus or the other. That's a really easy way to remember it. And then the last motion is opposition at the thumb. Maybe I don't have a picture. Yeah, I do. All right, here, opposition of the thumb. So in anatomic position, all your digits are kind of in one plane, but you can move your thumb anteriorly, okay, in front of your other digits, and then, of course, because you can flex your digits, right, you can bring your index finger together with your thumb, and that's called opposition. I guess that's a really important kind of motion. Very few animals have that motion built into the thumb joint right here. All right, so look at those motions, because I definitely want to use all of those different terms in lab throughout the rest of the class, right? It's kind of like saying inside, outside for what? Medial and lateral. Okay, things can get really bogged down. All right, let's look at the shapes of some articulating bones. And then we're going to look at the knee. Okay, shapes of certain kinds of joints. Where do we have this at? Okay, a plane joint, like we look at, produces a gliding motion. Okay, there's no kind of rotation at all. They just kind of slip over each other. So, oh yeah, it says a gliding joint right here. Like, for instance, between bones of the in the wrist, the carpals, would be some good examples of that. And even intertarsal joints as well are gliding joints. All right, the next kind of joint we see right here between the trochlea of the humerus and what is this part of the ulna right here? The trochlear notch, right? The trochlear notch is formed by the olecranon process and the coronoid process right here. So here's the trochlear notch, right? And that allows for flexion and extension at the elbow. And that is just a hinge joint, uniaxial, meaning that the motion is just around one axis through the elbow. So for flexion and extension. A pivot joint. Let's see which one is next. Oh, here's a really good pivot joint. All right, between the radius and the ulna. Here is the head of the radius, and it bumps up against the, anybody know the name of this notch in the ulna? Can you see it right here? That's the radial notch. Yeah. So when you pronate and supinate, okay, what happens is that the radius just pivots with respect to the ulna right here. All right, so that is just a nice simple rotation. It's a uniaxial kind of motion. All right, so just with this joint right here. And also between C1 and C2, I think I showed you in lab how those bones fit together. Very nice. So the proximal radial ulnar joint. Condyloid joint. It's a biaxial. That means that this particular joint allows motion in two different directions. All right, some places where we would find that is between the metacarpals and a phalanx. Okay, where is that joint going to be? Like right through here. So what can you do with your digits? You can flex right at that joint and you can extend. But what else can you do at this particular joint right here? You can abduct and adduct, right? So that's a biaxial kind of joint. So let's see what it looks like. All right, so a condyloid, kind of look almost like a ball and socket, but not quite, right? It's not quite as deep. So here is a nice biaxial motion between a phalanx, right, and a metacarpal, or between a phalanx and a metatarsal as well. Okay, so it allows for both flexion and extension and abduction and adduction. That's a condyloid joint. Pretty fancy joint coming up next. It's called a saddle joint because this looks like a saddle right here. And again, this is a biaxial kind of motion that's allowed. And this is going to be between metacarpal number 1, which is what digit? Yeah, your thumb, okay. And the trapezium, that's just a carpal that's in your wrist. I didn't have you memorize the name of that one, all right. But that joint has this kind of motion, so there are two axes that allows for what? Abduction and adduction, as well as flexion and extension as well. So that's a little bit more complicated than a condyloid joint. All right, and allows for opposition. So a saddle joint allows for opposition. And then the last kind of joint, okay, is a ball and socket joint. And two examples of that would be between the humerus and the scapula, the glenoid cavity of the scapula, or the head of the femur, and the, what would that be if this was an ascoxae? What matches up with the head of the femur in an ascoxae? Acetabulum, yeah. That's a nice, really deep, strong joint. Okay, so this kind of joint allows for flexion, extension, abduction, adduction, even rotation, right? And when you put all of these motions together, what do you get? You get circumduction, right? When you make that windmill motion, we call that circumduction. All right, and since you can bend that joint with all these different motions right here, we call that a multiaxial motion. And that's only at the hip and at the shoulder. All right, so all these joints that we looked at, right, plane joints, hinge joints, pivot, condyloid, saddle, ball, and socket, What kind of joints are these by function? So if you think of function, what word should like flash? Three letters, S-A-D. Which letter have we looked at? Like, for instance, in particular, this shoulder joint. Is it an S, an A, or a D? It's a D, and D stands for? Diarthrosis, right? So we looked at all these freely movable joints, okay? And then by structure, a different kind of separate classification, what kind of structure did all of these joints have? Fibrous, cartilaginous, or synovial? And you'd want to think synovial because I see hyaline cartilage, I would see a synovial cavity with fluid on the inside. Okay, so all of these joints that we looked at are synovial joints, and it just so happens that every kind of synovial joint is what kind of joint by function? They're all freely movable, right? They're all diarthroses. Yeah. Okay, let's look at one particular joint that's really important. So I'm not going to test you on the shoulder or the glenohumeral joint, but I want to spend a lot of time on the knee. Okay, it's not that people don't hurt their shoulders. They do because it's a relatively weak joint compared to the hip. Oh, there's one last thing I want to point out about a shoulder. There is one thing that I want to point out about a shoulder that we're going to go back and take a look at. But we're going to spend a lot of time with the knee. So let me find something because you hear about it all the time. It's a sports injury. Has to do with the shoulder. And the shoulder is pretty easy to damage. Maybe I see it here. No, I don't see it there. Okay, let's go back to the shoulder. Here's a nice shoulder. Here's even a nicer shoulder. Oh, this is a good view right here. Okay, so here is the scapula. And what part of the scapula is this right here? That is the glenoid cavity, glenoid fossa. I would take either one. Here's the acromion process. Here's the head of the humerus. So that's the ball. This is the socket that it fits in. And look, the glenoid fossa or cavity is hardly a cavity at all, hardly a fossa. It's almost flat, right? So the shoulder is pretty easy to damage, but you have nice mobility at the shoulder. There's something that makes the glenoid cavity a little bit deeper, which stabilizes the shoulder. It's not bone, okay? It's fibrocartilage, and it's this little wing sticking out right here. And this little wing sticking out right here. This is in just one dimension. In three dimensions, it would be a nice circle that completely surrounds the glenoid cavity, and that's called the glenoid labrum. Glenoid labrum. It's softer tissue than bone, so it's easier to damage, and athletes damage the labrum of the glenoid fossa fairly frequently. So I wanted you to know where that was. What's the job of the glenoid labrum? It deepens the glenoid fossa, and it increases the stability of the shoulder joint. Okay, and it's easily damaged. Why? Because it's not bone, right? It's cartilage, right? It's fibrocartilage, the glenoid labrum. I think it's labeled in your book someplace. I just don't know where it is. Okay, glenoid labrum. All right, well, we don't have to go looking for it. All right, so let's focus our attention particularly on the knee because it has all of the features of a synovial joint and even complicated synovial joints. All right, so let's look at a knee. Okay, and you can use your understanding of the knee to understand all joints in your body. Okay, let's start by looking at this picture right here. All right, so we can't really look into the knee at this point in time. Okay, because it's covered up by some muscles and it's covered up by some ligaments and some tendons. So let's go over some of these ligaments and tendons. Here are the muscles in your anterior thigh. These are really big, powerful muscles. And coming off of a muscle, we have some dense connective tissue that attaches to the patella. So what do we call a muscle-to-bone connection? That's a tendon. So this is the tendon of the quadriceps muscle. We're going to start looking at muscles probably next week. And it has four different parts to it, hence that's how it got its name. Quadriceps means big muscle with four different parts to it. Okay? And all the parts attached to the patella via this tendon, because the tendon is a muscle-to-bone connection. And then there's some more dense regular connective tissue that attaches the patella to the tibia. Right? And so what do we call a bone-to-bone connection? That's a ligament. So this right here is called the patellar ligament. Right, so you can see it connecting to the patella on one side, and then the distal end of that ligament attaches to the tibia at what location in particular? You got to know that for the lab practicum, this thing, or possible question. What is this rough raised area on that anterior proximal surface of the tibia? That's the tibial tuberosity. Tibial tuberosity. Is that on, labeled on the diagram? It's not, but it should. Label it in on your slides. Tibial tuberosity right here. That's something that is in your lab list for sure. All right, so when the quadriceps muscle contracts, it pulls on the patella, and then that pulls on the tibial tuberosity, and what motion does that produce? Extension at the knee or extension of the leg. You could talk about it either two ways, right? Okay. All right, so that's one important muscle group that works across the knee. But there are other important kinds of tendons. There's a tendon, ligament. Here's a ligament that goes from the femur across the knee on the outside, so we call that a supporting ligament, down to the head of the fibula, right? And this one that's on the side, and it's lateral in the knee, we're going to call that the collateral ligament. It just goes straight up and down on the lateral aspect of the knee, supporting the synovial joint. So that is the fibular, sorry about that cursor flipping around, fibular collateral ligament. All right, but it could also go by another name by what location it is in the knee. And how would you know? Because here's the fibula, and the fibula is what, medial or lateral? It's lateral. So another name for the fibular collateral ligament is the lateral collateral ligament. And maybe in news reports and things like that, they would actually say lateral collateral ligament and not fibular, because most people have never heard of a fibula before. But you guys have. Okay? All right, so lateral collateral or fibular collateral ligament, the same thing. And then on the other side, okay, you got the tibia, and the tibia is what, medial or lateral in the leg? Medial. That's why you got to know medial and lateral for those two bones in the leg. Here is another collateral ligament. This is the tibial collateral ligament, or you could call it the medial collateral ligament, either one. All right, so I got to grade your practicums when we go over the knee. On the third practicum, I got to be awake when I grade them, because you could use either one, right? And I only require one correct name. You don't have to give me both. So I just got to remember which one is which. And so do you. Okay, so that, we see some tendons, we see some ligaments, we see one tendon, and we see three ligaments that I want you to know. These other ligaments, okay, I'm just kind of ignoring, but they're in your knee. The retinacular ligaments, that means retinacular, means they're kind of thin and more broad, they're more surrounding, okay? But we're going to ignore those for right now. So let's open up this knee and take a look on the inside. Where do we do that? Okay, pretty close, couple of slides up. All right, so we've taken the muscle off, right? We've dissected the muscle away. I still see the patella here, and it's been reflected away anteriorly from the knee, so it's kind of hanging down, but in normal position, this patella would be up in this location here, right? And here is the tendon from the quadriceps that are way up over here someplace, so here's the tendon of the quadriceps. Here's the articular surface of the patella, and if you were to palpate that with your fingertips, how would it feel? Really nice and smooth, because it has even articular cartilage covering it, right? And it's going to articulate with the articular surface or the patellar surface on the femur up in this location, right? That just kind of relates to some things that you did in lab. All right, so here is the patellar ligament, quadriceps tendon, the patella, and then we see the condyles that are covered with articular cartilage on the femur, and one is the medial condyle, one's the lateral condyle. How would you know which one is which? If you can't, because you can't see the head, but I can see the fibula and tibia right here. So this has got to be the medial condyle that matches up with the tibia. This has got to be the lateral condyle that matches up with the fibula right here, right? So again, you got to know medial and lateral bone in the leg. And from previous discussions, just a second ago, here is what, the lateral collateral ligament. Here is the medial collateral ligament, right? And then we can see the meniscus, or the meniscus in the knee, right? Here's the lateral meniscus, here's the medial meniscus, and the only way you would know is by knowing that the tibia is medial and the fibula is lateral, right? And that's that fibrocartilage disc in the knee. And then here are two other ligaments, And these are the last ligaments that you're going to have to know about. They're not collateral ligaments that are on the inside and outside surface of the knee, but they're interior to the knee, right? And they're a ligament, which means they're what? A bone-to-bone connection, just like the collateral ligaments are a bone-to-bone connection. They go from the intercondylar eminence on the tibia into the condylar notch in the femur. And you can see, do they parallel each other, or what are they? What's the arrangement of these ligaments right here? They cross over each other. Can you see that this one is crossing over the one that's in the back? All right, so since they cross over, they're called the cruciate ligaments. They form a cross. The one that's anterior, thank goodness, is called the anterior cruciate ligament. And the one in the back, thank goodness, is called the posterior cruciate ligament. So sometimes in anatomy, it actually makes sense when they name something. Here's a really good example of that. All right, so that's the five ligaments that I want you to know, and the one tendon. The five ligaments are what? The lateral collateral ligament, medial collateral ligament, anterior cruciate ligament, posterior cruciate ligament, and these are cruciate because they cross over each other. And then here is the patellar ligament, right here between the patella and tibial tuberosity. All right, I want to talk a little bit about some knee injuries, but I'm kind of running out of time right now. I'll kind of finish up lecture in maybe 3 or 4 minutes when we start next time in class and talk about damage to the anterior cruciate ligament. Like, what is the job of this anterior cruciate ligament? What's the job of this posterior cruciate ligament? What's the job of this lateral collateral or medial collateral ligament? Right, so in order to describe the injuries that happen to these ligaments, you got to be familiar with your motions like flexion, extension, abduction, adduction, okay, in order for you to understand that discussion. So it's probably good that we're stopping. Just review what abduction, adduction is, flexion and extension for the next lecture, okay, and then I'll be able to describe what the job of these different ligaments are and what happens to them when they fail. Okay, sign-in sheet is going around. Maybe it is right here. So please sign so I know you're here. And one class I'll see up in lab. Other students I'll see Monday. Ah, don't forget, practicum. You can study bones in the study room, which is just in front of anatomy lab, and the library has bones as well. Okay, along with all those nifty, cool, interactive exercises in Blackboard. Okay. Yeah.